Americans could. Besides occasionally forgetting which revolution happened where, he was doing fairly well in his history class, too. And for the first time in his life, he was actually enjoying assignments in his English class. He was confident he hadn't done anything wrong, so why was he there? He grew paranoid someone had possibly framed him. Was he being held responsible for the graffiti on the lockers or the goldfish put in the faculty toilets? Sure, Connor thought those pranks were hilarious, but he hadn't done them. If they didn't think he was guilty, did they think he knew who was and want him to testify? Could he plead the fifth in school? Did he have the right to a lawyer or a phone call? The door to the principal's office opened, and a girl ran out in tears. Connor instantly tensed.
Mr. Bailey,
Mrs. Peters called from inside her office. Connor gulped. Hearing her call out his name was just as terrifying today as it had been when she taught him in the sixth grade. A huge promotion was the last thing she had expected, but Mrs. Peters had recently come up in the world. After 25 long years of teaching, Mrs. Peters had made the tough decision to retire. The subject had been on the veteran educator's mind for quite some time. Unbeknownst to her students, Mrs. Peters kept a calendar at her desk for years and marked down the days until she was eligible. She often daydreamed about her life after teaching. She planned all the exotic vacations she wanted to take. She made a list of all the small fixes around her condo she'd finally have the time to make. She assembled everything she needed to start a vegetable garden in her small yard. In other words, she was more than ready. But in the final weeks leading up to the conclusion of her teaching career, Mrs. Peters received the offer to become a principal. As appealing as a life of gardening and relaxation was, a life as principal gave her the essence of what she loved the most about being a teacher: authority over impressionable youngsters. Needless to say, she didn't hesitate to take the job. She thrived in the powerful position of administrating punishment, and occasionally, something would come up that allowed her to do what she loved more than anything, which was why she called Connor Bailey into her office.
"Have a seat," Mrs. Peters ordered.
Connor sat across from her so obediently he reminded himself of Buster, but didn't expect to be rewarded with a biscuit. His eyes wandered around the room. He noticed Mrs. Peters decorated her office in the same patterns and floral prints as the dresses she wore.
"Do you know why I've called you in here today?"
Mrs. Peters asked. She wasn't even looking at him. Her eyes were busy scanning through a stack of papers in her hands.
"Not a clue," Connor said.
He could almost see what the papers were in the reflection of her glasses.
"I wanted to talk to you about the writing you've been doing in your English class," she said, finally making eye contact.
Connor realized the papers she was going through were in his handwriting. He panicked.
"Is this about my essay on To Kill a Mockingbird?" he asked. "I know I wrote, 'One of the saddest parts about this book is that a girl's named Scout,' but I talked to Miss York about my approach and understand why it could have been better."
Mrs. Peters' eyes squinted and her brow flexed in a judgmental manner. This was bound to happen at least once when she was in the same room as Connor.
"Or maybe this is about my report on Animal Farm?" Connor said. "I know I said I wish George Orwell had used something to represent politics that didn't give me a major craving for a bacon cheeseburger, but that's really how I felt. I wasn't trying to be funny."
"No, Mr. Bailey," Mrs. Peters said. "I called you to my office to talk about the creative writing you've been working on in Miss York's class."
"Oh?" Connor asked. Creative writing was actually his favorite part of the class. "How am I screwing that up?"
"You're not," Mrs. Peters said. "It's fantastic."
Connor's head jerked in disbelief.
"Did you just say what I think you just said?" Connor asked.
"I believe so," Mrs. Peters said, almost as surprised as he was.
"Miss York was afraid your stories might have been plagiarized, so she sent them to me to look over, but they're unlike anything I've ever read. I assured her they appeared very original to me." Connor was having difficulty processing it all. Mrs. Peters, of all people, was complimenting and defending him?
"So I'm in here for a good thing?" Connor asked.
"A very good thing," Mrs. Peters said. "Your stories and perspectives on fairy tale characters are wonderful. I loved your stories about the Charming Dynasty, searching for the long-lost Charming Brother, and the Evil Queen's long-lost lover being trapped in her magic mirror. And Trix, the misbehaving fairy, and Trobella, the homely troll princess, are such imaginative new characters. It's very impressive."
"Thank you," Connor said.
"Can I ask you what inspired these stories?" Mrs. Peters said.
Connor gulped. He didn't know how to answer. Technically, he had used the class to write about his experiences, so the stories weren't necessarily creative writing. Was it considered lying if he couldn't tell the truth?
"They just came to me," Connor said with a shrug, I can't really explain it.
Mrs. Peter said something Connor had never seen her do before. She smiled at him.
I was hoping you would say that, Mrs. Peter said.
She retrieved a folder from the inside of her desk.
I took the liberty of looking at the student profile you filled out at the beginning of the school year. I found it interesting that under future career aspirations, you simply wrote something cool.
Connor nodded. I stand by that, he said.
Well, unless you have the goal of becoming a professional snowman, is it safe to presume you're open to suggestions? Mrs. Peters asked.
Sure, Connor said. He still hadn't thought of any jobs that fit the description.
Mr. Bailey, have you ever considered becoming a writer? Mrs. Peters said.
If these stories are any indication, with time and practice, I think you may have what it takes.
Although they are the only people in the room, Connor had to remind himself she was talking to him. A writer? Connor asked. Me? The thought had never crossed his mind. His head instantly filled with doubts regarding the prospect, like white blood cells attacking a virus.
Yes, you, Mrs. Peters said, and pointed at him for further distinction.
But aren't writers supposed to be super smart? Connor asked. Don't they say things like, I concur and I don't identify with the likes of this? Those kinds of people are writers, not me. They'd laugh at me if I tried being one of them.
Mrs. Peters exhaled a small gust of air through her nose, which Connor remembered was her version of a laugh.
Intelligence is not a competition, she said. There's plenty to go around, and there are many ways it can be demonstrated.
But anyone can write, right? Connor asked. I mean, that's why authors get judged so harshly, isn't it? Because technically everyone could do it if they wanted to.
Just because anyone can do something doesn't mean everyone should, Mrs. Peters said. Besides, anyone with an internet connection feels they have the credentials to critique or belittle anything these days.
I suppose, Connor said, but his defeated look said otherwise.
What makes you think I'll be a good writer? My stories are so simple compared to other ones out there, and I don't have a very good vocabulary, and I'm worthless without spell check.
Mrs. Peters took off her glasses and massaged her eyes. Connor was still a challenging student to get through to.
Having something worth telling and a passion to tell it are what make you a good writer, Mrs. Peters said. I can't tell you how many times I've read novels or articles that used complicated words and witty wordplay to cover up the fact that they had absolutely no story to tell. A good story should be enjoyed. Sometimes simplicity can go a long way.
Connor still wasn't sold on the idea. I just don't know if it's for me.
You don't have to decide right now, Mrs. Peters said. I'm only asking you to think about it. I would hate it if somebody with your imagination didn't do something cool with it.
She locked eyes with him, and another rare, small smile appeared on her face.
I have two loves in my career, reprimanding and encouraging, Mrs. Peters went on. Thank you for letting me encourage today. I don't get many opportunities.
No problem, Connor said. It's nice to be in the other category for a change.
Mrs. Peters put her glasses back on and handed Connor his stack of papers. He figured their meeting was over now and headed to the door, relieved not to be in tears like his principal's prior guest.
I am so proud of you, Connor, Mrs. Peters said just as he reached for the door handle. You've come a long way from napping in my class.
All Connor could do was smirk sweetly at her. If you had told him a year and a half ago that one day Mrs. Peters would become one of his greatest supporters or refer to him by his first name, he would have never believed it.
Connor mulled things over as he walked home. His thoughts soared into the realm of possibilities and sank into the realm of uncertainty. Had Mrs. Peters gone mad, or was he, Connor Bailey, actually capable of becoming a writer one day? Could he actually make a career out of writing about the experiences he and his sister had had in the fairy tale world? Would anyone want to read his stories about Trabella and Trix, or the evil queen, the big bad wolf pack, or Jack and Goldilocks? Would those people mind if he wrote about them? If he ever saw her again, would Goldilocks beat the living daylights out of him for writing about the love triangle between her, Jack, and Red Riding Hood? Connor figured people had been writing the same stories about them for centuries. Surely they wouldn't mind if he gave the world little updates here and there. But what about Alex? She had as much ownership over their experiences as he did. Would it bother her if he started sharing them with the world? Alex had always been the one with the future, not him. Planning had always been her specialty. Connor always expected she would grow up to be a doctor or lawyer or president. Unfortunately, he hadn't given his own future very much thought, so any prospect seemed like a stretch. Connor realized he wanted to get Alex's input on all of this,
but as he reached their house, he came to a halt. There's something there he didn't expect to see.
What's Bob doing here? Connor asked himself, recognizing the car parked outside their home.
The front door flew open before Connor could open it himself. Alex was standing on the other side, wide-eyed and white-faced.
Finally, she said in relief.
What's going on? Connor asked. Why is Bob here?
He wanted to talk to us before Mom got home, Alex said.
He knows that we know, and said he wanted to ask us something. I'm pretty sure I know what it is.
What? Connor asked, completely oblivious.
Just get inside, Alex told him. I think there's about to be a major development.
Chapter 5. The Proposal. Alex and Connor hadn't looked like identical twins since they were 4 years old. It was around that age when Charlotte stopped dressing them in the same outfits every day, and they started growing into their own unique features. But as they sat on the couch, both staring daggers at Bob with their arms crossed, it was once again hard to tell them apart.
So, Bob said, and shifted uncomfortably in a chair across from them. Your mom said she finally spilled the beans about us.
It was brave of him to take the situation by the horns.
She sure did, Connor said.
Bob nodded pleasantly, like it was good news. The twins didn't even blink. They were an intimidating pair.
I apologize that those flowers came to the house. They were supposed to have gone to the hospital, Bob said.
Yes, they should have, Alex said. Bob had done thousands of difficult surgeries over the course of his career. But he found being stared down by the children of the woman he was dating to be the most stressful experience of his life.
I understand why this is difficult information to process, Bob said. But it's still me, guys. I'm still the same Dr. Bob who you've had dinner with a dozen times. I'm the same guy who takes you to see the movies your mom doesn't want to see. I'm still the same guy who brought you Buster. I just happen to be...
dating our mother? Connor asked.
Nice try, but everything you've listed makes the situation worse.
We thought we knew you.
Are you admitting that Buster was some sort of dowry, Bob? Alex asked.
Alex, what's a dowry?
Connor said, out of the side of his mouth, not breaking his stare at Bob.
It's a settlement of sorts, Alex said.
Like, in ancient times, a man would be promised a dozen camels or something in exchange for his daughter's hand in marriage.
Gotcha, Connor said, diverting his full attention back to Bob. You don't think our mother is worth a dozen camels, Bob? One dog, and you think the deal is sealed?
I definitely don't think the deal is sealed, Bob said.
Yet. Alex and Connor narrowed their eyes in perfect unison. Bob reached inside his pocket and pulled out a small velvet box. The twins wondered what it was for a second, but only a second. Once they realized it was too small to hold anything but a ring, it dawned on them what it meant.
Oh my God, Alex said.
No way, Connor said.
Bob looked down at the box with a smile.
You know, when my wife died 4 years ago, I never thought I would be happy again, he said. I save lives every day, but for a long time I thought it would be impossible to save mine. And then along came your mom, and I learned I'd been wrong.
Alex and Connor looked at each other out of the corner of their eyes. They had never seen Bob get so sappy, but still they appreciated how honest he was being with them.
I know you've been seeing each other for a while, but this all seems so sudden, Alex said.
We only found out last night, Connor said. In our mind, you guys have only been dating for one day. Are you sure you weren't rushing things?
The way he looked down at the ring, with loving eyes and a heartfelt smile, made it obvious that Bob had never been so sure about something in his life.
I've been around for a while, guys, and I've learned that things like this don't come around very often, Bob said. Not taking this opportunity to ask your mother to be with me for the rest of my life would make me the biggest fool in the world.
Bob opened the box and showed the twins the ring. Alex gasped. It was the most beautiful ring they'd ever seen. It had a silver band with two large diamonds, one blue and the other pink. They could have sworn they heard music playing while it twinkled in the light, but it was just in their heads.
It took me a month to find the perfect one, Bob said. I knew this was right as soon as I saw it. I thought the diamonds would remind her of you two. They're different shades of the same cut.
Alex's eyes immediately watered after hearing this. Connor folded his arms a little tighter.
That's the most touching thing I've ever heard, Alex said, between sniffles.
Stop making me like you again, Connor said, brow furrowed.
Bob sat up straighter, happy their meeting was moving in a better direction.
I'm not trying to replace your dad, and I'm not asking to be your new one, he said. But I am asking for your permission to ask your mother to marry me. I don't want to do this without your blessing.
The twins couldn't believe it. They both felt like they were passengers on the ship, and now he was letting them be its captains?
We need a minute to think it over, Connor answered quickly.
Before Alex knew it, her brother was dragging her into the kitchen. They stood there for a few moments in total silence, just staring at each other.
What are you thinking? Alex asked.
I'm thinking this is uncomfortable, Connor said. This is more uncomfortable than the time I walked in on you and Mom talking about training bras.
Alex rolled her eyes and peeked into the other room at Bob, making sure he couldn't hear them.
Honestly, Connor, I don't think we have any power over this. It was really nice of Bob to act like we're a part of the decision, but you just heard what he had to say, and you heard what Mom said last night. I don't think anything is going to stop them from being together.
Connor sighed and ran his fingers through his hair.
You're right, Connor said.
But who knows if Mom is even going to say yes? Maybe she'll have reservations about it.
Reservations about what? Alex asked.
She loves him and he loves her. What's going to stop her?
Connor looked away from her, not wanting to say what he was thinking. But they were both thinking it.
Dad's dead, Connor, Alex said. He's not coming back no matter how much we want him to.
It was hard for Alex to be so frank. Usually she let the adults in her life dish out the tough love. But since they were slowly disappearing, she had no choice but to serve it up herself. Connor knew she was speaking to herself as much as she was speaking to him. Alex had a talent for saying everything he didn't want to think.
I suppose Mom has given us so much over the years. Our blessing is the very least we could give her, Connor said.
Yeah, it is, Alex said, and nodded. This is another big one.
Another big what? Connor asked.
A big moment, Alex said and sighed. We've had a lot of them.
Yeah, we have, he said. You'd think we'd be immune to it by now.
Immune to life? Alex asked. Is anyone ever that lucky?
Connor grunted and put his hands on his hips.
Fine, he said. He can marry Mom, but I'm still calling him Dr. Bob.
The twins returned to the other room. Bob anxiously stood and faced them.
Well? He asked, with bated breath.
The jury has spoken, Connor said. Alex and I have decided you may ask our mom to marry you.
Bob joyfully clapped his hands together and tears came to his eyes.
Guys, you've made me the happiest man alive, Bob said. Thank you. I promise to take care of her for the rest of her life.
Buster barked and jumped up and down, joining in on the celebration.
Where are you going to do it? Alex asked him.
How about here? Over dinner, maybe, Bob said. I'll order food from her favorite restaurant and surprise her when she gets off work.
When? Connor asked.
The sooner the better, Bob said. I'm free next Thursday night. How about then?
I have class in the afternoon, but I'll be home by 6, Alex said.
Great. Then it's settled, Bob said. I'll propose next week on Thursday night at 6 o'clock. I'll ask a few of the nurses to keep your mom busy so she doesn't get home early and ruin the surprise. This is going to be terrific.
The twins were looking forward to it. Not the event itself, but at a chance to see their mom happy again.
Hey, Bob, Connor said. Are you going to move in with us? Usually married people like to live with each other, for the first couple months at least.
That's a good question, Alex said. Where are we going to live?
My house, Bob said, and shrugged his shoulders.
Before she died, my wife and I bought a big house not too far from here, thinking we were going to raise a family. It'd be nice to finally fill all those rooms up.
The twins looked around their small rental house. The thought of leaving it made them feel sad. It had unexpectedly become home over the years.
It'll be weird to move again, Alex said,
but easy since we never actually finished unpacking last time.
I've got a swimming pool, Bob said, trying to cheer up the twins.
Connor's eyes grew big.
Whoa, he said. Bob, you could have saved yourself an entire afternoon if you had just started with swimming pool.
Alex rolled her eyes. Bob let out a soft chuckle.
Now Mom better say yes or I'm going to be disappointed, Connor said.
It was hard for the twins to focus on anything the following week. The looming Thursday stood out like a bookmarked page in their future. The closer it got, the more anxious they became. Alex and Connor didn't know why they were so nervous. After all, they weren't asking anyone to marry them. But in a strange way, Bob was marrying them, too. And as apprehensive about it as they were, the twins started to feel excited about Bob joining their family. Connor was really looking forward to having another man around the house. As much as he loved his mom and sister, He missed having someone else there who appreciated the comedy in a bodily function. He wrote a short story in his English class that week about a family of trolls whose mother was engaged to an ogre. It wasn't the most flattering depiction of any of them, but it was quite therapeutic for him. He drew little sketches in the margins of his paper. The troll children looked very much like him and his sister. The one based on Alex even had a headband in front of her horns. Alex found Connor working on the story one afternoon after school. She had never seen him look so devoted to something before. "What's this?" Alex asked him. "Oh, it's nothing," Connor said, a little embarrassed. He still hadn't talked to her about his meeting with Mrs. Peters. "It's just some creative writing for English."
"That's nice. Wait, is that supposed to be me?" Alex said, and pointed to a sketch.
"Not at all," Connor said. "What would make you think that?"
"Because it says supposed to be Alex underneath it," she said, annoyed and offended. "That's so rude, Connor. How old are you?"
Connor guiltily looked up at his sister. "There's something I forgot to tell you," he said. "I've sort of been writing about the two of us a lot in my English class."
"What do you mean?" Alex asked.
"About our adventures in the fairy tale world," he said. "They've made for some great stories. That's why Mrs. Peters called me into her office the other day. She really liked them and wanted me to consider being a writer. She said I may have what it takes, whatever that is." He paused. "Thoughts or concerns?"
Alex blinked twice.
"I think that's a wonderful idea," she said, and Connor sighed with relief.
"Why didn't you tell me sooner?"
"I was worried you wouldn't want me spreading our business around," Connor said. "You're kind of the co-owner of our experiences."
"On the contrary," she said. "I think they should be told. We saw so many things and met so many people, it would be a waste to keep them to ourselves. Dad would be so proud of you."
Connor smiled to himself. He hadn't thought about that.
"Really?"
he asked. "You think so?"
"Absolutely," Alex said. "He'd be so happy the storyteller gene went to one of us. I've always tried telling and retelling stories, but you're so much better at it than me. You're funny. People like listening to you."
Connor shrugged. "Ah, shucks," he said, "but I'm not going to argue." He pulled out the stack of his stories to share with her. "This one is about Trix's trial, and this one is about Trabella giving freedom in exchange for a kiss. Wish I could forget about that. This was my first one, about the curvy tree, but I was super paranoid people would find out it was true, so I changed it to the curvy giraffe. It doesn't make as much sense, but, oh well, I'm learning."
"This is great, Connor," Alex said. "Really great."
Connor grinned from ear to ear. He believed her much more than he believed Mrs. Peters. Her approval gave him the validation he needed to believe in himself. Alex flipped through her brother's stories. She smiled and laughed as she scanned through them, remembering the events they were based on.
"Oh, dear," Alex said, looking up from the papers, a fresh thought behind her eyes. "Bob, are we going to tell him? Are we going to tell him who Grandma and Dad really are?"
Connor couldn't answer. The thought hadn't crossed either of their minds until now. How are they going to share their family's biggest secret with him?
"Should we tell him?" Connor asked.
"We probably should in case Grandma ever shows up with an elf or a fairy on our doorstep," Alex said.
Connor looked off into the distance.
"Gosh, who are we?" he said.
"What other family has a problem like this? Most skeletons in the closet don't have wings."
"I imagine he'll have a lot of questions either way," Alex said. She let out a long sigh. "But it's not like it's really relevant anymore. It may be pointless to tell him we have ties to another dimension if we don't get to interact with it ever again."
"Guess we'll just have to play it by ear," Connor said.
"It may be a good excuse to have in our back pocket for when we get older. We could tell Bob we're going to the fairy tale world and then go to a party instead."
Alex tilted her head and looked at him curiously. "Why would we ever choose a party over the fairy tale world?"
Connor shook his head. Just for once, he wished his sister would think like a normal teenager.
"I keep forgetting you're an 80-year-old trapped in a 13-year-old's body," he said. "Never mind."
The end of the week slowly arrived, and the twins woke up to a beautiful Thursday morning. They gave their mom extra long hugs just before they left the house, causing her to raise a suspicious eyebrow at them as they headed to school. Alex and Connor felt like the day passed by extra slowly. They glanced up at the clock every 5 minutes, only to be disappointed it hadn't changed much. As soon as school ended, Connor ran home and met Bob at the house to help prepare for the night. He cut corners over his neighbor's lawns and was so careless he nearly tripped over a lawn gnome. Alex was too antsy to enjoy her honors course or be sleepy on the train ride back. She just wanted the night to be perfect for her mom. And from the looks of things when Alex finally got home, it was going to be pretty close.
The kitchen table had been covered with a silk cloth, and there were candles placed in the center. A bottle of champagne and a bottle of cider were on the table as well, begging to be opened for a celebration. The whole house smelled delicious, as Bob had picked up food from Charlotte's favorite Italian restaurant. He was dressed in a nice suit and tie and held the box tightly in his hand, afraid to let it go. Even Connor had dressed up, putting on his best button-down shirt. Alex tried putting a bow on Buster's collar, but he wouldn't let her. The dog had been acting strange for a couple days. He stayed seated by the front door and growled at it occasionally. The twins figured a new cat must have moved into the neighborhood, or maybe their jitters were rubbing off on him. But aside from the dog, everything seemed to be going according to plan. Alex ran up to her bedroom and dressed in a skirt and her nicest headband. She came downstairs at 6:30 and joined Bob and Connor at the table. "Mom should be here any minute," Connor said. "Let's make this proposal quick, Bob. I'm starving." "I'll do my best," Bob said. He kept looking down at the ring. As excited as the twins were, they knew it was nothing compared to what Bob was feeling. They couldn't wait for her to walk through the door and see them waiting for her. Alex hoped her mom wouldn't cry too much, because then she might start crying. Connor hoped Alex wouldn't start crying, because then he might start crying, and there's no dust to blame it on. Unfortunately, Charlotte was running late, so the three of them were forced to wait. They waited, and waited, and waited some more. More than an hour had passed after the time she was supposed to be home.
"Should we call her?" Connor asked.
"Maybe we should give her a ring to see where she is. Get it? Get it?"
"No, don't," Alex said. "She can't suspect a thing."
After another hour, the twins' anticipation turned to anxiety. Bob decided to put the food away so it wouldn't go bad.
"I guess Nurse Nancy's being very thorough," Bob chuckled. "She's probably making sure your mom doesn't get here too early."
But the twins weren't laughing. The last time they'd waited this long for a parent, they'd lost one.
"I'm going to give Nancy a call," Bob said, after even more time had passed, and he dialed his colleague at the children's hospital.
"Hello, Nancy? Hi, it's Bob. I'm here with the kids. Has Charlotte left yet?"
Alex and Connor leaned toward him. They could barely make out what Nancy was saying on the other line. From what they could hear, she sounded surprised.
"She left 2 hours ago," Bob said into the phone. "Are you sure? We haven't heard anything from her."
Alex and Connor exchanged fearful looks.
"Something's wrong," Alex said. "I can feel it. Something's happened."
"Mom is never late like this," Connor said, shaking his head.
"Okay, thank you, Nancy. I'll try calling her," Bob said, and hung up the phone.
He quickly dialed Charlotte's number next. He didn't make eye contact with the twins, not wanting to add to their concern with his. Bob tried calling several times, with no luck.
"She's not answering, guys," Bob said.
"Do you think she spontaneously decided to run any errands tonight?" Alex, worried sick, burst into tears.
"We need to call the police," she said.
"The police wouldn't do anything unless she's been gone for 48 hours, Bob said. "Let's not panic just yet."
Connor jumped up from the table and paced around the room.
"There's got to be something we can do," he said.
"I'm going to get on my bike and go looking for her," Alex said.
"I'll go with you," Connor announced.
"Nobody's going anywhere,"
Bob said calmly, although the twins knew he was just as stressed out as they were.
"We've tried calling the hospital and her phone. Let's wait for a few minutes in case she tries to call us back."
Alex's tears began to flow faster the more she worried, and it was impossible not to. The twins feared that history, their history, was repeating itself. Buster suddenly started a barking frenzy. He was staring intently at the front door, jumping up and scratching it, growling as loudly as he possibly could. The twins had never seen him like this before.
"Buster, what is it, boy?" Bob said. "Is someone at the..."
The doorbell rang. All of them, including the dog, completely froze. It rang twice before any of them moved.
"Who could that be at this hour?" Bob asked, and went to answer the door.
The twins followed him into the doorway. They almost wished he wouldn't answer it. Whatever or whoever it was too late to be anything good. Buster began another barking and jumping fit.
"Buster, get down, boy," Bob told him.
The dog backed away from the door and stood directly in front of the twins, protective of them. He was ready to pounce on something in an instant if he didn't like the looks of it. Was he sensing something they couldn't? Bob looked back at the distressed twins.
"It's going to be all right, kids," he said calmly. "Whatever happens, just know it's all going to be okay."
Bob slowly opened the front door and peeked out onto the porch. It seemed empty.
"Hello?" he said.
Still, There was nothing and nobody to be found. Hello? Bob tried again. Is anyone out there?
Seize him!
In a split second, a dozen soldiers dressed in silver armor barged through the door. One slammed Bob hard against the wall. Alex screamed. Connor grabbed her arm, and they tried to run to the other side of the house, but the soldiers formed a tight circle around them and Buster. Their swords were drawn, and they held heavy shields with small glass slippers displayed on the outside crest. The twins recognized the soldiers immediately. They were from the Charming Kingdom. But what in the world were they doing here?
"Get your hands off me this instant!"
Bob yelled, struggling under the soldiers' restraint.
"Get away from those kids! Who are you people?" "We've securely surrounded the twins,"
a soldier closest to Alex called to the open front door.
"Bring in the fairy godmother!"
Alex and Connor looked to each other so fast they could have hurt their necks.
"Fairy godmother?" they said in unison.
Two other soldiers quickly charged into the house, led by none other than their grandmother.
"Grandma?"
the twins gasped together. They almost didn't believe their eyes. She looked exactly the same as she did the last time they saw her. She was dressed in her long sky-blue robe that sparkled like the night sky. Her hair was styled up, with beautiful white flowers in it. She raised her crystal wand authoritatively as she walked into the house. The twins had never seen her look so worried.
"Oh, thank heavens,"
Grandma said. The soldiers parted their circle for her, and she threw her arms around Alex and Connor.
"You have no idea how happy I am to see you,"
Grandma said, hugging them so tight they felt like they'd pop. The twins didn't hug her back. They couldn't believe they were seeing her in real life. Their heads were spinning with so many questions, but they only managed to spit out the basics.
"Grandma," Alex said, "is it actually you? Where have you been?"
Connor said. Their grandmother gently placed a hand on each of their faces.
"I'm sorry I've been gone for so long," she said sorrowfully. "I promise to explain everything later."
She took a moment just to look at them through teary eyes. They knew she had missed them as much as they had missed her.
"Just look at you two. You've both grown a foot since the last time I saw you,"
Grandma said. Just then, a familiar man walked through the front door. He had a distinguished jawline and wore a bright yellow suit. To Bob's amazement, the man's shoulders and his hair were actually on fire. The twins recognized him instantly. It was Xanthus, the only male fairy on the fairy council.
"I checked around the property," Xanthus said. "It's clear."
"Xanthus?" Alex said. "What's he doing here?"
Bob fought restlessly under the soldier pinning him to the wall.
"What is going on?" he yelled. "Who are you people?"
Grandma raised her wand in his direction. Xanthus pointed a few fingers at him, and his whole hand suddenly lit on fire. Both were ready to fight if necessary.
"Do you know this man?" Xanthus asked the twins.
"Yeah, that's Dr. Bob," Connor said. "Don't set him on fire. That's our mom's boyfriend."
"Boyfriend?"
Grandma said, and lowered her wand.
"Well, I must have been gone for longer than I thought."
"Release him,"
Xanthus ordered, and lowered his hand. The soldier immediately dropped his hold on Bob.
"This woman is your grandmother?"
Bob asked the twins.
"Is she part of the circus or something? What's with all the tricks and costumes?"
"What on earth is a circus?"
Xanthus said, unsure whether he should take offense. Alex and Connor didn't know where to begin.
"Bob, it's a long story," Alex said.
"In a nutshell, our grandmother is Cinderella's fairy godmother from the fairy tale world," Connor said. "I know it's a lot to process, so take your time, but we promise that's the only baggage our family has got."
Bob's eyes grew bigger, and he glanced at the soldiers, at their grandmother, and at Xanthus.
"Uh-huh,"
Bob grunted, not convinced. Their grandmother looked around the living room, gravely concerned.
"Where's your mother?"
she asked.
"We don't know," Connor said.
"She was supposed to be home a few hours ago,"
Alex said.
"Grandma, what's wrong?"
Connor asked.
"Do you know where Mom is?"
Their grandmother didn't answer, staying deep in thought.
"Grandma, what's happening?"
Alex demanded.
"We haven't seen you in over a year. Why have you suddenly shown up out of the blue? You have to tell us what's going on. Where's our mom?"
Their grandma looked back and forth between them.
"Children, what I'm about to tell you is going to seem very frightening," she said. "But I need you to be strong and trust that many qualified people are handling the situation."
The twins nodded impatiently. Any news was better than no news.
"I believe your mother has been kidnapped,"
their grandmother informed them. They were wrong. Having no news was much better than knowing this. Chapter 6. Positioning the Gnomes.
Alex and Connor stopped breathing. They felt like their hearts had fallen out of their bodies.
What?
Alex asked.
Kidnapped?
Connor gasped. What do you mean, kidnapped? By who? Alex covered her mouth in horror. Connor frantically shook his head from side to side, not wanting to believe it. Who would want to kidnap a nurse who worked at a children's hospital? How much danger was she in? The situation must be bad if soldiers and fairies from another world were standing in their house. Their grandmother closed her eyes tightly.
I don't have time to explain, she said softly.
Connor turned bright red.
What do you mean you don't have time to explain?
He shouted. You give us that information and expect us not to have questions? Their grandmother looked down at them sternly.
I'm expecting you to trust that I'm handling it the best of my ability, she said.
We're not children anymore, Grandma. You have to tell us what's going on, Connor said. He had never had a reason to raise his voice to her before in his life.
I know that, and that's why I'm being honest with you. You deserve to know the truth. There's much to discuss later, but right now, the less you know, the better. Is that understood?
Grandma said. They didn't respond, because they didn't understand, or agree one bit. Buster barked up the fairy godmother. Oddly, he hadn't been fazed by the newcomers in their home.
Grandma, please, we need to know what's going on,
Alex managed to say through her tears.
It'll have to wait. Right now, I need to speak with Sir Lambton,
Grandma said. What does he have to do with anything? Connor asked, remembering the friendly head of Cinderella's royal guard he and his sister had met in the fairy tale world. Grandma bent down and looked into Buster's uneven eyes, and the dog sat straight up. The twins had never seen him look so obedient.
Sir Lambton, have you seen anything strange or out of the ordinary?
Grandma asked. Connor glanced over at Alex. Had their grandmother lost her mind? Did she forget dogs couldn't talk in their world? And why on earth was she calling him Sir Lambton? Buster barked a single bark at her and nodded, as if he had understood perfectly.
Oh, forgive me,
Grandma said apologetically, and waved her wand toward the dog.
Speak.
A flash of light traveled from the tip of her wand and into the dog's mouth. Buster began barking. The sound slowly morphed into the sound of coughing. Human coughing.
Pardon me, the dog said. My word, it's been a long time since I've had to pronounce anything.
Both of the twins gasped. They weren't strangers to talking animals, but hearing their own dog suddenly speak left them completely flabbergasted.
Nothing out of the ordinary at all, the dog said.
Charlotte left for work this morning and hasn't been home since.
Sir Lambton?
Alex peeped, through the hands covering her mouth.
Is that you?
You're our dog?
Connor said.
Indeed, children,
the dog confessed and lowered his head.
I'm sorry I couldn't reveal my identity to you. Your grandmother wanted someone looking after you, but thought having a soldier living in your house would cause you to worry, so she turned me into a dog.
Connor turned to his sister, reddening by the second.
We can't even have a dog without it being a magical conspiracy? It's been very challenging,
Sir Lambton said.
Dog food and cleaning oneself are some things I don't think I will ever get used to, and the urges to taste and smell absolutely everything are quite bothersome. But for you two, I would walk to the ends of the earth.
It was a sweet sentiment from their late father's old friend, but the twins didn't have any room for gratitude in their heads.
Did you know about this, Bob?
Alex asked. Bob had been so still the twins had almost forgotten he was there. He had turned a pale shade of green and was holding his stomach. It was clear by the horrified look on his face he had nothing to do with it. This was the first talking animal he had ever seen.
I hope you can forgive me for casting a little spell on you at the shelter, but I had to make sure you chose Sir Lambton to bring home.
Grandma said.
I thought you were just a friend of Charlotte's. I had no idea you were so involved.
I, Bob muttered. I think I'm going to be sick.
He ran straight for the bathroom on the other side of the house. Obviously, Bob had reached his surprise limit for the night.
So this whole time we thought we had a dog when really we had a babysitter?
Alex asked, trying to wrap her head around it.
A protector. Not a babysitter, Grandma said.
A protector from what? Connor asked.
Their grandmother and Sir Lambton looked at each other. The twins knew they were set on keeping as much information from them as possible without being dishonest.
I promise to share with you the appropriate information as I learn it, Grandma said. It's a concerning time in the fairy tale world, and it's kept me very occupied. The situation recently reached a peak, and I was worried it would affect you, so I made the proper arrangements to make sure you were protected. Unfortunately, it seems your mother has fallen victim to it.
Speaking of precautions, Fairy Godmother, Xanthus interrupted, we should position the gnomes while the neighborhood is empty.
Gnomes? Connor mouthed Alex. Very well, Grandma said, and looked to the other guards she had entered the house with. I'd like you to take the first shift watching the inside of the house. The rest of you, please follow me outside so I may place you.
Grandma and Xanthus quickly led the soldiers outside of the front lawn. The twins followed closely behind them, with Sir Lambton at their feet, and watched from the porch. Even though they knew she was a veteran leader of the Fairy Tale World's Happily Ever After Assembly, it was still strange watching their small grandmother give orders to the large soldiers.
Take your places, Grandma instructed.
The soldiers positioned themselves on the perimeter of the Bailey's front yard. Their house looked like a miniature Buckingham Palace. The fairy godmother waved her crystal wand and one by one turned each soldier into a lawn gnome with a bright flash. They all had pointed red hats and white beards.
They look just like the gnomes in our neighbor's yard, Connor said. I almost tripped over one today.
That was a soldier, actually, Sir Lambton said down by his knee.
He's been watching the outside of the house for a couple months.
Creepy, Connor said.
What's going on out here?
Said a sweaty and green-faced Bob, stepping out of the house.
Where'd all the soldiers go? Where'd all those gnomes come from?
You just answered your own question, I'm afraid, Alex said.
Bob's eyes darted around the front lawn as he understood. The twins felt sorry for him. In less than an hour, he had discovered his girlfriend had been kidnapped and had ties to the fairy tale world. But overall, they thought he was handling it well.
After the fourth time I vomited, I realized I wasn't dreaming, Bob said. I have no history of mental illness in my family, so my best self-diagnosis is that it's just one of those nights.
Don't worry, Bob. The shock wears off eventually, Connor said to him. I think. Alex and I have only known for a year, and we're still waiting.
Grandma walked back to the porch with Xanthus, giving him careful instructions as they went. The soldiers may be an eyesore for the neighbors, but at least they're disguised, she said. I want you to stay here and watch over the twins. No one is to enter or leave this house without my permission.
Alex and Connor only heard the tail end of their conversation, but it was enough to infuriate them.
What do you mean no one can come or go? Connor said. We're going to be stuck in our own home?
Until it's safe, Grandma said.
But I have to work, Bob said. I have patients and surgeries to attend to. People need me.
Grandma thought on this for a few moments.
You may come and go as you wish, she said. With all due respect, it's my grandchildren I'm worried about.
What about school? Alex asked.
You can go back as soon as everything has settled down and we figure out where your mother is. But for right now, we can't risk it, Grandma said. The less contact with the outside world, the better off you'll be. I'll write to the school and tell them you've both fallen terribly ill.
You can't lock us up,
Connor yelled, loud enough for the whole street to hear.
We haven't done anything wrong, Alex shouted. Why are you punishing us like this?
Their grandmother waved her wand at each of them, and they went silent. They tried speaking, but no sound came out. She had magically muted them.
Please obey my instructions, Grandma said. Even with several soldiers, Xanthus and Sir Lambton watching over you, I'll be worried sick.
Grandma looked down at Sir Lambton.
I'd like for you to stay a dog for the time being, she said. The gnomes will attract unwanted attention enough as it is.
Yes, ma'am.
Sir Lambton said with reluctance. He had been quietly hoping his dog days were over.
Now I must be going, Grandma said.
She waved her wand, and the voices of her silenced grandchildren returned.
So that's it then? Connor said. For a year we hear nothing from you, and now suddenly it's, hey kids, your mom's been kidnapped, and oh yeah, I'm putting you both on house arrest?
I never thought you could do something like this to us, Grandma, Alex said, and looked at her grandmother as if she was a stranger.
Their grandmother took these comments to heart. She didn't like disappointing them, but unfortunately she had no choice. She could only do what she thought was best and hope they'd forgive her one day.
I know you dislike me a great deal at the moment, their grandmother said, but you're the only family I have left. You mean more to me than anything else in the world. One day when you have families of your own, you'll learn that there is no length you wouldn't go to ensure their safety, even if they end up hating you for it.
She left them on the porch, in the hands of the others, and walked off into the night, slowly disappearing into soft, sparkly clouds.
I love you both, she said sadly, and a second later, she was gone.
We should get inside before anyone sees us lingering on the porch, Xanthus said.
He and Lambton escorted Bob and the twins inside. Whether the lockdown would last days, weeks, months,
or years, wasn't certain. But for the time being, the Bailey twins were prisoners in their own home. The first few days of captivity went by very slowly for the twins. They couldn't eat or sleep. All they could do was worry about their mother. The question that haunted them the most, however, was why had she been taken? How could their mother, a simple nurse at a children's hospital, have gotten involved in all of this? Why had their grandmother been taking such measures to protect her grandchildren in another dimension? Was their mother even in this world, or had she somehow been taken into the fairy tale world? Xanthus and Lambton were tight-lipped about the whole thing. Despite the daily pleas from the twins to tell them something, anything, they insisted no news was the best news. Unfortunately, the twins' imaginations did little to soothe their distress. Were the Troll King and Goblin King seeking revenge on the twins for stealing their crown a year ago? Had the big bad wolf pack somehow resurfaced? Did it have something to do with the evil queen and her magic mirror? The twins didn't have any answers, and it was driving them mad. Also testing their sanity was how crowded their home had become. Their rental house felt small with just three people and a dog. But now a dozen grown men had been added to the mix. The guest room had been filled with cots, and most of the downstairs looked like an army camp, with swords and shields and pieces of armor everywhere you looked. Xanthus ran a tight ship while he looked after the Bailey home. He was very strict about the soldiers' shifts, making sure they rotated being gnomes and being in the house evenly. Meals were always served at precisely the same times every day. The twins were only allowed outside once a day, in their backyard, and only if Lambton was watching them. Xanthus was very devoted to his duties, too. He spent every day glued to the window facing the front yard, and the twins never saw him sitting down for more than a few seconds. Bob had been very kind and checked up on the twins every morning on his way to work. His stories of the sick children he was taking care of at the hospital were the only contact they had to the outside world, so they looked forward to it every morning. The bags under his eyes were a clear indication that he felt as helpless as the twins did. He also unsuccessfully tried getting information out of Xanthus and Lambton. At one point, he tried bribing Lambton with a bright bouncy ball in exchange for Charlotte's supposed whereabouts, but it just offended him. The twins tried making small talk with the soldiers they were practically living with, but it was apparent that they knew as little as the twins. "Do you enjoy your time as a gnome every day?" Connor asked a soldier. "It isn't altogether unpleasant," the soldier said with a shrug. "It gives me a little time to think."
"Speak for yourself," the other soldier said. "I had a pigeon sit on my head for 4 hours yesterday, and he left a present on me, if you catch my drift."
"Gross," Connor said.
"Can't you just turn back into a man and shoo it away?" Alex asked.
"I wish," the soldier explained.
"We can only transform back if there's danger. Otherwise, we'd all be shooing off pigeons and blowing our cover."
Alex and Connor made a mental note of this. Later that night, the twins had just finished dinner when a bright flash came out of nowhere. The twins looked up, and floating down from the ceiling was a sky blue envelope.
"It's from the fairy godmother," Xanthus said, and flew up into the air to retrieve it. Apparently a fairy didn't need wings to fly.
He hovered in the air a few feet above the ground while he read it, keeping it out of the twins' sight. Alex and Connor stood below him. Xanthus's eyes grew large as he read the note from their grandmother.
"I see," he said when he finished reading. He floated down and faced the twins. "Your grandmother would like me to pass along some information to you," Xanthus said.
"Yes?" Alex asked. They were practically vibrating with anticipation.
"We believe your mother is in our world," Xanthus said. "That is all."
He placed the envelope on his shoulder, and the flames devoured it.
"Is that a good thing or a bad thing?" Connor asked, unsatisfied with the update.
"Neither. It's just information she'd like you to have at this time," Xanthus said.
The twins let out exasperated sighs. Knowing more almost made it worse. Later that night, Alex pulled Connor into her bedroom to speak with him privately. She turned up her radio so Lambton's canine hearing couldn't pick up what they were saying.
"Mom's in the fairy tale world," she said to him. "You know what that means."
"What?" Connor asked.
"It means I think Grandma may have lied to us," Alex said. "How else could Mom have gotten there without her knowing about it? Maybe she isn't the only fairy who's capable of traveling between worlds."
Connor nodded.
"I don't think Grandma lied to us," Connor said. "I think we're just mad at her right now, so now we're trying to blame her for anything we can."
Alex rubbed her tired eyes. She knew he wasn't altogether wrong.
"Just a few days ago, I was worried about Grandma and angry with Mom, and now I'm worried sick about Mom and furious with Grandma," Alex said. "It's crazy how fast things can change."
"Yeah, it is," Connor said with a sigh.
How do you think Mom got there, then? Alex asked him.
Connor thought on it for a good moment.
I wonder if there's more than one way to get into the land of stories, he said.
Alex's head jerked back up at him. She had spent so much time hugging books and trying to recreate their last portal, she'd never thought about other options.
Like what? Alex asked.
I don't know, Connor said.
But if Grandma's storybook had the capability, I'm sure she would have created other ways over the years, right?
It would only make sense that she would have created other ways to come and go, Alex said, thinking out loud.
Not for her, necessarily, but for the other fairies she recruited to help spread the stories around our world, right?
Connor's eyes widened and he pursed his lips.
What's your question? Alex asked him.
I hate that you guys know when I have a question, Connor said, and then asked, Are you sure there's no way you could make a portal on your own? Alex would have loved to believe she was capable too, but knew in her heart that if she was, she would have surely found a way by now.
No, it was Grandma's magic, Alex said. I just...
Turned it on? Connor asked.
Right, Alex said.
Then I wonder if Grandma has anything else we could turn on, Connor said.
Another thought dawned on Alex as soon as he said this. And maybe that's why she didn't know where Mom was, she said, nodding to herself. Maybe someone had gotten a hold of something, like her storybook, and used it to get to Mom.
They looked to each other, and small smiles appeared on their faces. They weren't smiles of happiness, but smiles of achievement. They knew that they were onto something. They could feel it.
But who? Connor asked.
Chapter 7. Lucy Goosey. The next evening, the twins sat in the living room and watched the news with Lambton. He sat with his nose just a few inches away from the screen, completely mesmerized by it. His head was tilted, and a single ear was raised.
I must say, of all the technologies in this world I've been introduced to, this is by far my favorite, Lambton said, with a wagging tail. The television is remarkable.
I've seen magic mirrors do much more impressive things, said Xanthus, perched by the window, devotedly watching the neighborhood. Although, one thing I think I definitely could do without is the fire alarm. If I set it off one more time, I swear I'm going to yank it off the wall and smash it into pieces.
Well, with all due respect, being on fire in this world is never a good thing, Connor said.
Xanthus raised an eyebrow judgmentally and turned back to his window. The flames on his shoulders rose in spite.
A bright flash suddenly filled the room. The twins looked up, and floating down from the ceiling was another sky blue envelope, just like the day before. Once again, Xanthus flew up to retrieve it and read the new note from their grandmother in midair, away from the twins' curious eyes. When he was finished reading, he placed it on his shoulder and let it burn away before returning to the ground.
We're leaving, Xanthus said, and immediately had the twins' full attention. Sir Lambton and I are being called back into our world.
Why? Alex asked.
Xanthus took a moment to compose his response.
The fairy godmother needs us there more than she needs us here, he put simply. But don't worry. She's sending in a replacement to watch over you.
Connor grunted. Oh, great, he said, with a massive eye roll. Who's going to babysit us now? Bingo and the Tooth Fairy?
No, Mother Goose is replacing us, Xanthus said.
Alex and Connor stared blankly at him, and then at each other. Was he being serious? Xanthus didn't seem like he had much of a sense of humor.
What? Xanthus asked them, with no trace of sarcasm. I'm serious. She's flying in from Europe tonight.
The Mother Goose? Connor asked. As in the Jack and Jill went up the hill, Mother Goose?
Yes, of course that Mother Goose, Xanthus said, and looked at him as if he had lost his mind. Is there any other Mother Goose?
What is she doing in Europe? Alex asked.
Someone has to continue your grandmother's storytelling work while she deals with the crisis at home, Xanthus said. But I wouldn't mention Jack and Jill to her, unless you want to hear her talk about conspiracies all night. Mother Goose has always been a bit of a, well, a handful.
Mother Goose was the only member of the Happily Ever After assembly the twins hadn't met in the Land of Stories, so they were looking forward to finally meeting her. However, the woman they expected her to be, and the woman she actually was, were very different geese. A little past midnight, the twins were awoken by Lambton's shouts.
She's here! She's here!
Lambton called through the house.
Mother Goose is landing!
The twins met in the hall, rushed down the stairs together, and followed Xanthus and Lambton into the backyard. They looked up into the night sky, but didn't see anything but stars and the moon.
I don't see anything, Connor said. Trust me, Lambton said with his ears raised. I can hear her.
Suddenly, a large silhouette flew past the moon. A large object was zooming toward them. The twins squinted, trying to see what it was. The closer it traveled, the clearer they could see, riding on the back of a gigantic white goose, none other than Mother Goose herself.
I have to admit, when you said she was flying in tonight, I wasn't expecting this, Connor said.
Easy, Lester, slow down, boy,
Mother Goose shouted in a raspy voice. She yanked on the reins of her large bird. They were approaching so fast, the twins and Lambton dove under a patio table, taking cover. Xanthus remained exactly where he was, not deterred in the slightest. He had seen Mother Goose land before. The goose landed hard on the ground with such a thud the entire house shook behind them. It felt like a mini earthquake.
Good Lord, Lester, you call that a landing?
Mother Goose reprimanded the horse-sized goose.
Meteors make softer impacts than that, you stupid gander.
Lester rolled his eyes, or at least the twins thought he did. His web feet were planted deep into the lawn, and he struggled to pull them out. Mother Goose was a short, stout, elderly woman. She had curly gray hair under a pointed black pilgrim hat that had a silver buckle on the front. She wore a baggy green dress with a white ruffled collar, large boots, and thick aviator goggles around her eyes.
Are we even in the right place? Mother Goose said, looking around. I can't find my map. This is why I need to install a GPS in the back of your head.
Her goggles made her eyes appear enormous and obviously impaired her vision because she didn't see Xanthus standing directly in front of her.
Hello, Mother Goose, Xanthus said, with a little enthusiasm he could muster. You're in the right place. Welcome to the Bailey home.
Zanny, is that you?
Mother Goose asked and took off her goggles. Her face was red, weather-beaten from the flight.
Oh, Zanny, am I glad to see you. I was worried Lester had taken us to Tijuana again. He loves Mexico.
Xanthus cringed at the nickname.
Besides the landing, I hope the rest of your flight went smoothly.
Mother Goose hopped down from Lester with difficulty.
Oh, it was fine, she said. Except when the future pillow stuffing here bumped into a 747 over Pittsburgh, stupid bird.
Lester slowly shook his head. Obviously, he had a different side of the story.
Those damn planes have gotten so big they don't leave much sky for the rest of us, Mother Goose said. I should have never encouraged the Wright brothers. Biggest mistake of my life.
She did a few windmill stretches, and the joints in her back cracked like fireworks. Alex, Connor, and Lambton cautiously climbed out from under the table and approached her.
Mother Goose, let me introduce the twins, Xanthus began. This is Alex and Connor.
Yeah, I've met the squirts before, Mother Goose said.
She put her hands on her hips and looked them up and down.
You have? Connor said.
It was years ago, when you were babies.
I visited you with your grandma, Mother Goose told them.
She pointed to Alex and then to Connor.
If memory serves me right, you never stopped crying, and you peed all over me when I changed your diaper.
She leaned close to them, eyeing them seriously.
I let it slide the first time, but history better not repeat itself.
Alex and Connor both gulped. Now they knew what Xanthus had meant. Mother Goose's serious face broke into a giant smile, and she cackled loudly.
Relax, kids, I'm just yanking your tail feathers, she said.
Mother Goose turned to Lester and pulled a large basket off the goose's back.
Carry in my luggage for me, would you, boy?
She shoved the heavy basket into Connor's arms, and he grunted under its weight.
And you, Mother Goose said to Alex, would you mind fetching Lester a bucket of vegetables? He needs to eat after such a long flight. Just no broccoli. It gives him gas.
The goose looked at her with large eyes and an open beak, appalled she would give out such personal information.
Don't look at me like that, Lester. It does, Mother Goose said.
You want me to feed him? Alex said nervously and backed away from the oversized bird.
Don't be afraid of Lester, honey, Mother Goose assured her. He's all squawk and no waddle.
Xanthus and Lambton escorted Mother Goose inside the house. Connor lugged the basket behind them. It was so heavy he almost threw out his back. Alex went into the kitchen and tossed all the vegetables she could find into a large bowl for Lester. Mother Goose looked around the Bailey's rental house.
Not bad, not bad.
It's just a rental house, Connor said. We've only been here a couple years.
I stayed with the old woman who lived in a shoe long before she had it renovated,
Mother Goose told him.
Trust me, after that, anything else seems like a palace. I'll never forget that smell.
It's become a bit of a prison for us recently, Connor said.
Young man, I've visited many prisons and been visited in many prisons. This is not a prison, she said. Put my basket by the fireplace, would you?
Connor dragged the basket to the fireplace as he was ordered.
Mother Goose reached inside it and pulled out an enormous wooden rocking chair. Connor couldn't believe his eyes. It was so much larger than the basket. He wondered